Hello, Beginner's Puck listeners. Welcome back. As we promised a couple of weeks ago on our last regular episode, we have decided to drop our very first members-only special in the main feed so everybody can hear the kind of nonsense that we get up to when we are doing our behind-the-scenes stuff that's just for members only. So yeah, way back in the, at the dawn of time in 2017, Deb and I invited fellow incomparable panelist Lisa Schmeiser to join us in watching a movie called Goon, a hockey film, and we talked about it, and it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of laughs. It wasn't like a commentary where we were watching and talking about it at the same time. We watched it and then came together to talk about it. So that is what you are about to hear after I am done blathering in your ear. But first of all, the reason that I am blathering in your ear is to remind you once again that you can support this podcast and all of the lovely podcasts on the Incomparable Network by becoming a member of the Incomparable. If you sign up for a monthly or annual pledge, you can even support our podcast directly. You just go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up. You can choose which shows on the network you want to support. If you just check the box for Beginner's Puck, then your contribution will come to us after a few fees are taken out. If you do listen to other podcasts on the Incomparable Network, you can check their boxes, and your contribution will be shared equally by all of the shows you want to support. And as a thank you for supporting us, members receive lots of extras. In addition to fun nonsense like this that you're about to hear from several years ago, there are some exclusive podcast feeds, including an ad-free version of the Incomparable Mothership show. You get bootlegs of live recording sessions for a bunch of different podcasts, and a special feed full of bonus episodes that only members get to hear. Well, unless several years down the road, some nice podcast host decides to drop it in the main feed just as a tantalizing glimpse at what you can get if you become a member. New members will also receive Incomparable swag as well. As we mentioned on our last episode, this year's members-only special for Beginner's Puck was a wonderful conversation about Score, a hockey musical, with Deb and I, my spouse Stephen, and our friend Kirsten, talking about one of the most Canadian things ever. That musical has a song called Kraft Dinner, if that gives you an idea of the kind of fun that we had. Anyway, there are contribution levels at $5, $10, and $20 per month, and annual equivalents are available as well. If you are already a member, it's easy to increase your pledge to a higher level and get some special goodies in return, including some free Incomparable swag. So if you would like to support us, go to theincomparable.com/members to sign up. You can also give an Incomparable membership as a gift. It is really easy. I have done it, and the person that I gifted it to was really happy and became a member of the Incomparable Slack community and just had a great time. So anyway, we hope that you'll choose to support us. If you don't, that's fine. We hope that you will choose to continue listening to our nonsense as we move through the summer and on into the next season of hockey. So thank you, and please enjoy our time travel-y ramblings from lo, those many years ago, with our podcast about Goon.
Hey, this is Beginner's Puck, a podcast for hockey fans both new and old. Well, this is a very exciting episode of Beginner's Puck because it is a members only. And we're not even talking about current things that are happening in hockey. We're talking about a movie. Specifically, we're talking about Goon, the 2011 movie written by I'm never going to pronounce his name correctly, Barackle and Evan Goldberg, who are well-known for, like, those dude movies, you know, Pineapple Express and that, you know, movies in that vein, which I think Goon particularly fell into. But, Erica, we have a special guest for this podcast.
We do. I am so excited because it is a special members-only edition to thank all of you wonderful, incomparable supporters, whether you are supporters of our podcast or not. We love you. Big, big hugs. We decided to bring on another incomparable voice. So to join us to talk about this lovely hockey-based movie is another voice you might recognize from the Incomparable flagship show, from the Flashcast, or maybe Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies. Lisa Schmeiser, welcome to Beginner's Puck.
Thank you both for having me so much. I'm so excited to be here today.
What's so exciting to have, it's exciting to have like another woman talking about hockey as we were chatting a little bit before we started recording. It is, it's still a pretty dude heavy space. There's lots of women hockey fans out there, but they don't seem to be quite as vocal because as you said, very smartly, they're probably just busy doing other things.
I think we need to work harder to find those ladies, those fans to bring them into our circle, into our fold.
It's true. I mean, and I've come to the conclusion that like the best time I have watching hockey is with my girlfriends anyway. So I don't know. I don't think watching like hockey with my husband is just not good. Like I told him he can't come to games with me anymore. He doesn't hockey right. So
I'm lucky in that regard. I have a,
you're very lucky. All right. So tonight we're talking about Goon, which is a movie that I watched for the first time. Erica, you watched for the first time. Lisa, this is not your first time watching Goon.
No, it's how I chose to celebrate my 40th birthday, actually, was by watching that movie.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. I wanted to see it. I liked a lot of the people in it. And I came to the Church of Hockey comparatively late. I was in my 20s and when I first got into hockey. But I have always really liked going to the games. The only crowd that compares, as far as I'm concerned, is women's professional soccer. And I really loved going to my college's games. And when I, you know, later left school, I was lucky enough to go to a boatload of Capitals games when I was in Washington. Mm-hmm. And then when we lived down in Los Angeles, it was easy enough to get to Kings games because no one was attending Kings games. And I miss that energy because once you move to the Bay Area, Sharks tickets are crazy expensive. And it's a little inconvenient to get down there from where I am up at the top of the Bay. So, you know, the movie was kind of a way to get back to that scrappy collegiate feel or to the scrappy feel of the Stockton farm team that's out about 90 minutes to the east of me. And I was surprised, not surprised, but I was pleased by how funny and how full of heart I found the movie to be. And it was just a lot of fun to revisit that and remember. It's a nice watch, if that makes sense. It's something where if it were playing on cable, I'd probably sit down and watch it again just because I know I'd laugh at parts, or I know there are certain scenes that just feel really satisfying.
You know, it's interesting because this movie is sort of being held up as our generation's version of Slapshot, which just celebrated its 40th anniversary. And I know the NHL Network had a huge sort of celebration. They did a couple airings of it. They did a little mini documentary, you know, the filming of and the behind the scenes look at Slapshot. So, you know, Erica, you have seen both of these movies. Mm-hmm. So how did you, what was your, like, the comparison like for you in sort of that classic old school style hockey film and Goon, which really echoes back to that kind of nicely.
Well, I, as listeners to the old movie club might know, I don't like movies from the 70s. So, like, Slapshot just, it has that very sort of 70s style feel to it. It's sort of a sweaty, shaggy, gritty movie, which is just...
It's a good way to describe 70 movies.
It's like Lon Kane stripping on the ice.
Yeah, everybody has,
everybody like has a lot of hair.
A sheen, and their hair's a little bit greasy, and... just that's how they roll, and that's not my thing. So I didn't really dig Slapshot, and I have to admit that when I saw it, I was not a hockey fan. I knew next to nothing about hockey at the time, so I wasn't even sort of electrified by that side of things. I think if I watched it again now, it would be a very different experience. But I still don't know if it would have, if it would play to me as well as Goon did. And I mean, Goon's not exactly my up my alley film style wise. Like, you know, I've never seen Pineapple Express, and there's a reason for that. That is not my kind of movie. And this also is, it's very, very, very lowbrow in its humor and in the way the characters interact. But it really does have, like Lisa said, a lot of heart. And I just, it by the end, it absolutely won me over, and I really enjoyed it. So I am kind of curious to go back and watch Slapshot again at some point and see what I think now coming at it from this angle.
Oh, you go to the penalty box, you feel shame is actually right, something that gets trotted on our house a lot.
I believe that.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure you had the same sort of depth in the secondary characters that Slapshot has.
I know.
As Goon, because the secondary characters in that film were just so well-rounded and very much, you know, archetypes of old-style hockey players that I felt that was a little lacking here, but the humor and the heart was there, because what I really appreciated about this more than ever after watching Slapshot, and especially after, you know, we had, as you're listening to this, we have we're a few episodes into Beginner's Puck, but one of our very early episodes, we talked about Tom Sestito being called up from the Boston, or being called up for Pittsburgh Penguins, to act as this role of the enforcer, which just kind of struck everybody as really appalling, because hockey is kind of moving away from that. But here you have that same sort of character, that same, that goon, that character enforcer, who is just such a sweet guy.
Yeah.
He's just so lovable that even though he's doing this, he's out on the ice and he's a beast, he's the thug. He just has such a good heart and is just so polite. And just, you know, the scene where he's talking to his parents, where he just wants them to be proud of him.
Oh.
You know, it just tugs at your heartstrings.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really notable that the first time you really see him thug out is when a customer uses a very specific slur against homosexuals, and Doug says, "My brother's gay. You want to?" And the customer repeats it, and that is when Doug is like, "Okay, fine, it's over," and. It is really interesting to me that the way Goldberg and Barrichell, I've always said Jay Barrichell, it could be Barrichell for all I know. But the way Goldberg and Barrichell write Doug repeatedly is he's just a guy, he's incredibly self-aware. And that's another thing that comes through in the movie is when he's like, I'm dumb. I'm a dumb guy, but here is, I can do good for people and I belong to something and I protect people and that's honorable. And I like that in every one of his scenes, he never has really a moment of self-doubt or crisis. For him, the every one of his scenes is, do I measure up? Am I going to be good enough to reward the people who've put trust in me? Am I going to be good enough to get the girl? Am I going to be good enough to protect this guy who clearly needs protecting on the ice? Even when he has the fight with Liev Schreiber's character at the very end of the movie, it's pretty evident the only reason he's really fighting him is he's not doing it because he wants to give the fans a big showdown. He's not doing it because he wants to be the best thug on the ice. He's doing it because Xavier needs this.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally for the team. And It is such a dignified picture of a thug, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, it really gives the idea that you can have very noble motives for going on the ice and just beating the crap out of people.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the only time we really see him lose his temper on the ice, too, mm-hmm. is after he feels that LaFleur has been hit dirty and just... You know, he doesn't get angry when he fights. And we talk about that a lot, is the code and sort of this mm-hmm. idea of how you conduct yourself on the ice. And it can be very polite. There was just a hilarious mm-hmm. little exchange last week as we're recording this of two hockey players that, you know, they had their little fight. They're like, you done? Yeah, I'm done. And then they're back in the penalty box and they're making plans for the summer because they're so winded. They need, you know, Joey doesn't know cardio has become like the new hockey meme. So you have this just this politeness for several fights, but the only time you really mm-hmm. see him get angry and just vicious is when he thinks mm-hmm. one of his teammates has been not a good hit, not even a good fight, but when he thinks it's been a dirty hit or a dirty fight is when he really kind of loses control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In our first episode there, when we were talking about this, I think both you and I, Deb, talked about how we have such sort of mixed and complicated feelings about this whole thing. And the line that he says, that Doug says at one point, is, I like standing up for my team. And that is, I think, mm-hmm. the thing mm-hmm. that resonates with both of us, that the idea of playing that protective role is really just, you know, a sweet kind of thing. But at the same time, like, you know, beating each other's brains out just still seems to me like a weird and wrong thing. But yeah, you just brought up the guys chatting and stuff beforehand. And there was one scene where they're standing. I think they're in the penalty box, Doug, and I can't remember who else mm-hmm. it was. And they say, you want to go? And then, yep. And then they wish each other good luck. Good luck, man. Good luck to you, too. And then they start fighting, and then they say good fight after. And mm-hmm. Steven, my spouse I was watching this with, just started laughing out loud. And he was like, that's how it goes! Because he also plays hockey. I mean, he doesn't get into mm-hmm. fights, but he has seen that happen. That's life, man.
We will definitely have to link to that clip because it's so funny. Because even at as these two players who are exiting the penalty box are like, yeah, you have a good season. Like, yeah, you too, bud. And it's like, you just were wailing on each other like 2.5 minutes ago. And now it's all done. It's forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also interesting because the fight culture is so different. Like, I should say that the performative masculinity in hockey is so different than in other professional sports to begin mm-hmm. with. I mean, because let's face it, these are dudes who skate backwards like figure skaters half of the time. Like, yep. the thing that really made me fall in love with hockey, to be honest, was the footwork. Mm-hmm. Because the first time you see them come out, literally the first time I saw the players come out to the ice with, you know, all the padding and all the equipment, and then watched them, you know, execute these dazzling toe-loop turns. And they're just so beautifully light on their feet, and it just adds this element of magic to the game. And again, like, there's an element of performative masculinity in there, but it seems to be a whole lot less martial and unfocused aggression and a whole lot more controlled, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that also comes across in the movie Goon, too, because they make it really clear that Doug's not a fighter off the ice. Like, this is just a job to him. And what he gets out of the job is not the chance to beat the crap out of people. It's the chance to feel useful. And that also gets brought home really sharply by the end of the movie when, and it's not even the big fight that he has with Liev Schreiber's character. It's that really brutal one where he takes the puck to the face.
Mm, yeah.
And you know, the minute the game is over, his entire team clears the bench and hits the ice and brawls for him. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, they're his family, they're his crew, they're his tribe, they're his people. And especially after that scene where his parents had so sharply rejected his achievements, like, I felt like these were meant to be bookends where you see what he actually gets out of hockey is this sense of pride and acceptance and reassurance that they have his back.
And validation. I mean, he's validated exactly. that he yeah. is good at something. The thing that he is good at has value and is exactly. appreciated by somebody and appreciated yeah. by a lot of somebodies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what I love. The thing I also find really interesting about this movie, because I have actually watched a lot of movies in the Apatowian genre. I mean, I hated Knocked Up for, you know, reasons we don't need to get into. But I have seen, you know, Superbad was a Goldberg movie. This is the End is another one that Barry Kell wrote mm-hmm. with Goldberg, I believe. And I've seen Pineapple Express. But what makes this movie stand out a bit more is instead of valorizing the whole slacker man-child ethos where, you know, isn't it cute when men don't grow up and they're slobby and not very considerate of other people's feelings and women's are harpies and shrews in a separate species? Like, that's kind of an ethos that flits through some of their other films. And in this one, that battle of the sexes is entirely absent, which, mm-hmm. like, which I noticed because it wasn't there, rather. Mm-hmm. But also the way they treat the idea of what it means to be a man is really nuanced and mature, comparatively speaking. Because these are all guys who are obviously struggling with different definitions. You've got the weeping divorced dad who's a total mess. Like, I love that character.
Oh, I know.
Because he's constantly... And you've got the goaltender with the mommy issues. And then the hilarious Russian brothers who won't stop razzing him. But, you know, with LaFlamme and with Doug, you have two very ideas of what it means to try to be a man and derive some meaning and some purpose. And watching them struggle with it and then come to the conclusion that I need to find something where I feel like I'm contributing to a wider world and I can't do it without connections to another human being. Like, that's a remarkably, like, non-bro-y message to put in a film from these guys. And that's why I liked it, I was like, this is a really gentle film in some ways, in terms of the way it treats the struggles people have in trying to determine who they're going to be in the world. And how that either fits in or defies the expectations other people have for them.
Mm-hmm. Right. One thing I noticed that was interesting, too, was sort of the kind of reversal of gender roles a little bit. I mean, we certainly mm-hmm. didn't have a lot of female characters here. We basically had one, unless you count the yeah. mom as well, or all of the random naked chicks that are hanging out in their freshman dorm-style apartment. But
that was actually kind of funny, just the running joke that it was a different woman I'd never seen.
Yes. That's a mm-hmm. lot of extras they had to pay for this movie. I'm just, yeah. And extras who are willing mm-hmm. to get naked. So I'm sure a decent chunk of the budget went just to that.
Yeah.
But usually in your stereotypical film, it is the dude who is the guy who is sleeping around and who is inspired mm-hmm. to the idea of monogamy by the girl of his dreams. And this time it's mm-hmm. completely flipped around. And I don't feel like the film casts any judgment over Eva mm-mm. for being yeah. the kind of person who sleeps around. You know, she calls herself a slut, but that to me, that mm-hmm. reads as something that a woman in her position would probably say, but she doesn't really say it with malice toward herself. It's sort of more of a matter yeah. of fact, like, this is me, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. I'm not a great girlfriend.
And I'm okay with it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I felt like that was also sort of a nuanced portrayal of a woman on screen mm-hmm. that it's better yeah. than we get in some romantic comedies. Actually, a lot of romantic yeah. comedies.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know, it's interesting that you brought that up, Eric, because I noticed that too, that we have, because these films typically tend to, they have that sort of male-female thing that's going to be the catalyst, that's going to be the story, that's going to be the thing that saves everything. You know, that relationship mm-hmm. is so important and it's so crucial, and women are treated in a very degrading manner. Not to say that, you know, the floating girlfriends that come through, you know, mm-hmm. the naked women, you know, is still a little problematic, mm-hmm. but that's never the point of the story. Like, you have this sweet sort of little romance, and again, you have this gender-flipped idea of the woman mm-hmm. being the player, and it's a very, you know, sort of bro movie that removes that element of sexuality mm-hmm. from the bro movie that I yeah. find to be really refreshing, because that tends not to happen a lot. There always tends to be, you know, the idealized, the crude locker room talk mm-hmm. about getting laid and everything. And you just, yeah. that's kind of absent here.
Yeah. What I liked about it also is nobody's rescuing anybody else. Mm-hmm. Nobody is fixing anybody else. And Eva is won over because, you know, Doug is 100% who he is. He's just this very sweet, very honest, very uncomplicated guy. And she's and what I like about it is she's attracted to the purity of his personality. She's attracted to the fighting too. Mm-hmm. Like, that's mm-hmm. made really clear. But she's never going to be like that unfunny. Like, my biggest complaint about a lot of Apatow type movies is women are reduced to being unfunny scolding nags.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And the fun killers.
Yeah. They're the enemies of fun. And here she's not. There are the enemies of fun in this movie are Doug's parents.
Yes.
And, but it's implied, it's actually not implied. It's shown very heavily in both scenes that we have with them. They don't accept either of their children.
Yes.
And, you know, so that way it's made really clear to us the problem is not with who Doug is, the problem is with his parents. But, you know, Ava's not the fun killer here. She's not the enemy of fun. She's not trying to change Doug into being anybody else.
Make him grow up and put away childish things.
And it's just so nice to see a movie where it's not heavily implied that people get together because they simply because their grudges have finally just ignited into something else. Like, these are people who genuinely liked each other for who they were. And that's, again, that's really weird. It's weird that it's rare. It shouldn't be weird and rare, but it is, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, Erica, you had talked a little bit about this before, because you are not a fan of the fighting mm-hmm. in hockey. You don't like the brutality mm-hmm. of that. And as we move towards a more skill-based game, and this is what the hockey analytics people are saying all the time, we're moving away mm-hmm. from that. It's a skill game now. It's a skill game. It's fast. Yeah. It's furious. And I like what you said about the beauty of it, Lisa, because mm-hmm. when I first started getting into hockey, I noticed the same thing. Like, they're tearing around the ice and just performing these incredible things. I think, what did I say to you, Erica? It's like murder poetry on ice.
You said murder poetry on on knives or on blades or something.
On knives, yes. On knives. Mm-hmm. But this, the fighting in this is brutal. I mean, it's graphic. Yeah. So how did you react to that, Eric, in watching it? Knowing that it was fictional fighting, did that make it easier for you? Mm-hmm. Or because I know at the end, I kind of had to turn away a little bit because it was the noise. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't just even the visual. It was like the noise of fists hitting sort of increasingly wet flesh.
Yeah.
The Foley was really good on this film.
I think it helped that the very first scene where we see blood flying, it's very clearly CG. CGI blood. So that, I think that just sort of helped me get in the mindset that yes, this is fictional fighting, and it is based on a true story. So there was always kind of that element to it. But I think because this is not a fight, you know, the fights in here were not fights that are happening in real time in the real world. They are choreographed, they are edited, there's Foley added to make it highly entertaining in a way that, to me, real fighting is not. So, I mean, I did kind of enjoy some of the fight scenes simply because I think of the way that they were shot, the way they were framed, the camera movements. I found it really a well-directed film. So I think maybe I was just watching it from a filmmaker type standpoint, and I was enjoying it from that. If the filmmaker had chosen to do it differently, like if it had been, you know, a long shot or a medium shot that was just the whole fight, and any of the fights in the film that were sort of more simple like that, I didn't like as much. So yeah, I'm still, it's not like this movie has turned me around on fighting. I still am not a big fan of it, and I think it's boring. But when you're having, you know, a nice close-up of a fist hitting a face, and you have the slow motion shot where you can see like the flesh sort of like wiggling in the air, I mean, yeah. I'm not gonna say I love that, but I am impressed by the movie magic that it takes to make that happen in front of me.
Where do you fall on the fighting? Yeah, I was going to say, where do you fall on the fighting scale here, Lisa? This is because, you know, Erica's made her position very clear as somebody that I turn to for hockey questions a lot. Mm-hmm. Is this something that you feel adds to the game, or is it something that is barbaric and you like the idea that's being pushed out a little bit?
So I have to say, I like the idea it's being pushed out because the toll it takes on the players is terrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've had a wave of deaths and CBT, and I think it would be very difficult to be an ethical hockey fan and really be thrilled about the idea that people are going to suffer for the rest of their lives so that you can be amused by them brawling on the ice. Mm-hmm. So I like that a lot. And the times I've seen fights break out on the ice in hockey, it's nothing like that movie, because in real life, the fights come out of nowhere and they're confusing to watch because it's two people literally going at it, and it's not choreographed. It's people who are trying to put a hurt on somebody else. And, you know, I would be lying if I didn't say there isn't a moment where you're like, oh, and you're kind of caught up in it. Mm-hmm. And then when it's done, I'm like, oh my God, you know, but for me, the delight in the game is again, it's the footwork and it's the stick work. Like right. I really love watching the footwork, especially if somebody's just sent the puck, you know, flying halfway down towards the crease and everyone's racing to get there and you're just watching all the pieces come, you know, like it's like watching pieces in a game board and you're just watching everybody and their awareness of every other player out there, and they're trying to figure out the best spot on the ice and how to get there and who they're gonna check on the way or who they have to avoid. It's a beautiful, like, I find that to be really thrilling.
And you had mentioned, you know, that the recent deaths, there was actually some controversy when this film came out because it was right after the deaths of three NHL enforcers, and they were all, I guess, they pretty much were all ruled suicides. Just because of their depression and reliance on pain medications and things. So it can be very brutal. I mean, careers have ended because of this. And this idea, like I said, that's why I think we were both so shocked. And I think the hockey world was shocked when Cicida was called up to be that, to perform that role as the enforcer, because you just don't see that. You have people on teams who fight. You know, Jamie Benn is the captain of the Dallas Stars, and he's known for dropping the gloves. He will get into a mix. And you always have those players on the team. But to have this role, this goon role, and again, as being it feels like a step back, right?
Yeah.
It really does. So when you see that now, it's like everybody, oh, okay, that's really odd. We've kind of moved away from that a little bit. So to me, the one thing that I appreciate, the most violent and gory part of this film wasn't the fight. It was the puck in the face.
Yeah. Oh, God. That scene was so hard to watch, especially as the clock's ticking down and then he gets the bleed to the ankle.
Yes.
And I appreciated that they put that in there because I've seen that happen on the ice and it's horrible. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Like, and the way, like the first time I saw that at a game, like people reacted like their mothers had just been slapped, and I did not blame them, because that's mm-hmm. you think about all of the pressure that's coming down to a cutting blade, and mm-hmm. you're not in a position where you can actually get it off of you, and it's mm-hmm.
yeah.
There were a couple of ankle moments in this movie. There was that, and then his ankle actually snapped sideways at the end.
Oh, yeah. I know. I think that was worse than the actual fighting. I agree. That,
yeah. Yes.
I'm getting chills, like, thinking about that.
Yeah. They did actually kind of allude to the painkiller thing, because the goalie.
Yes.
The Winnipeg goalie with the mommy fixation, and, you know, calling his fist Siegfried and Roy, which, you know, was pretty funny. But
Steven laughed at that out loud, because apparently Patrick Waugh used to talk to his goalposts all the time. And he's one of the greatest goalies in hockey history. And I was like, oh, so that's real too, huh?
Yeah, it's this movie is, I wish I knew much more about hockey, because I get the feeling there's layers upon layers of stuff I don't get. But they do talk about, he's real, and it's really just casually thrown in there like three or four times through the course of the movie that this guy is addled on painkillers.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, he's playing goalie because that's his thing, but he's also on the, do you have any narcotics I might avail myself of?
yeah, don't touch my Percocet, and also, do you have any?
Yeah, exactly.
And then later, when Doug is, you know, all jacked
I'm
up.
I'm high on painkillers.
High on painkillers. He's like, I got you covered. Like, we're good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, you said something interesting that, you know, you wish you knew more about hockey because there's so many layers to this. And I mm-hmm. was listening to somebody talk about the sequel. They went to the premiere of the sequel and talking about who this player is sort of an amalgamation of, you know, they combined all these different players to create this type and the influence is there. But Erica, as somebody who is, you know, very deep diving into hockey, what are some of the, we talked about the goalie, you know, because goalies are weird.
Goalies are weird. Yep.
Goalies are yeah. weird. So what other little
they're
hockey
like,
nuances?
Like the drummers of the hockey world.
They really are.
Oh my God. Don't say that to Steven. He's a drummer and he thinks goalies are very weird. So.
Oh no.
Oh no. You love it when they go out and like, they all have their little rituals. You know, they have to like crisscross the ice in front of them a little bit, or they pat the pipes, and it just, mm-hmm. yeah, like don't mess with their pregame routine. But so, what are other little hockey nuances that you picked up in this that felt real? I mean, obviously mm-hmm. we have the one where nobody wants to walk across, you know, the team symbol, with the exception of the team logo, with the exception of LaFlame, who that is the big moment where uh-huh. you realize he accepts himself as a member of the team when he uh-huh. walks around the logo.
So sweet.
But what other little hockey things did you pick up that felt very true to you?
There were some good ones. Actually, the logo thing made me think about the new rink here in Edmonton. They did what several teams have done. The Oilers actually have their logo on the ceiling, so you can walk anywhere you want to in the dressing room, and you don't have to worry about walking on the logo, which is not
That's
the kind of
smart.
Thing you're going to find at you know, an AHL team's rink there. But yeah, I like that. Another thing that I noticed about LaFlemme was the fact that he has his mouth guard like sticking out of his mouth, and he's chewing on it all the time. That is so legit. So like, there
looks like a nasty mouth guard though, like he has had it since junior.
It was so gross.
Yep.
Yeah,
which is also legit, because I have seen some
athletes are really superstitious about that stuff though. In any mm-hmm. sport, you're gonna have an athlete who either has like a hat they haven't taken off for 14 years or well, no, like my husband's a huge baseball fan. Like, seriously, he's written for Baseball Prospectus, baseball fan. And when we were living down in Los Angeles, we'd go to see the Anaheim Angels play a lot, because it's easy to get tickets. It's easy to get back and forth to. And that was when Vladimir Guerrero was playing for him. And Vladdy was a fantastic player. This is back when he was in his peak. And every time Vlad came up to the bat, he put on the filthiest batter's helmet you've ever seen in your life. Like, you could have grown radishes in that thing. It was just disgusting. Like, every time I saw it, I was just amazed that you didn't have just, you know, flies buzzing around it. And he looked like Pigpen, but it was his thing. And he didn't wash it, because that was part of the whole mojo that went along with it. And you have that in every sport. And so I liked that the mouth guard touch was like that, where it's pretty obvious this guy has, like, it's his whoopee. It's his mouth guard whoopee.
Another thing I noticed, which is not exactly hockey related, was just the music. I loved the music in this. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, we get the obligatory Rush, but there was a friggin' Chilliwack song in this movie. I mean, I had never heard of Chilliwack until I came to Canada, but they're quite a big thing here amongst a certain crowd. So yes, the sort of like 70s Canadian arena rock music, you still hear that. You definitely do. That was fun.
I very much like the really horrible rendition of O Canada, the local pop shantou DJ.
Oh my God, that was so funny. I was thinking, I was trying to think what the disgusting mouth guard reminded me of. And wasn't there a thing a couple years ago where like Sidney Crosby was using the same jock strap for like 10 years or something ridiculous? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like that became a thing. Like, is he ever going to replace that?
I wouldn't believe anything about Sidney Crosby.
So I think that was a subtle callback. That's the one I'm going to give that one to. But yeah, the singer. Oh man, I've heard some bad singers sporting events. That one felt very true.
Yeah,
very good.
Yeah. The Regina vagina joke also real. It is very funny when people come to Canada for the first time. It's fun to watch them realize it's really pronounced Regina. Like that is a thing I've seen, and it makes me laugh every time. Because I did the same thing. I was like, really? It's not Regina? Nope, it's not. It's Regina.
The Quebecois fans, the behavior and the vitriol they had towards La Flamme was right on. Mm-hmm. I can't even remember which game it was when I was in upstate New York, but it involved some French Canadian hockey player who was playing for us, and the fans were, they like, you do not mess with Quebecois hockey fans. That is like
state religion. Like,
well, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and they do not forgive and they do not forget.
So. Yeah, that was bitter. That was bitter. But even the idea of being sent down and the bitterness that a player can feel, like. Players today are so media trained. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't matter what crap they're going through. It's like, oh, it's a good opportunity. You know, going to play my game. And you know that there is some deep, deep bitterness seething, you know, with all with the call-ups and being sent down. That, to me, seemed like, okay, maybe this is a little bit of a peak. Maybe it's a dramatic, an over-dramatized peak. But I can imagine what it must be like if you were a top prospect. Or say you're Taylor Hall and you get sent from the Edmonton Oilers down to the New Jersey Devils and are on a crap team. Like, what goes through your head and how do you move past that? Or how do you not move past that? Mm-hmm. Because there have been some players that have not been able to move past that. So I thought that was interesting to delve into that idea of being such a hot prospect and then being sent to, I don't even think this is AHL. I think this is ECHL level hockey.
Well, you contrasted La Flamme being sent down with, you know, Ross the Boss being sent down. And it shows two really different points in a career too. And I think it has less to do with hockey talent, because Ross is always like, no, I wasn't there to play hockey. I was there to bleed. But his whole thing was, I'm playing. This is it. You know, this is, I'm still in it on some level. And La Flamme is so early in his career. And the idea I got from him, or from the way they read his character, is this is somebody who had never been seriously tested, if that makes sense. Like, he had just been so good. And it reminds me a lot of what happens with baseball, because, again, married to a massive baseball fan, I've sort of picked it up by marriage. No, I converted to the Oakland A's on marriage. But, you know, we watched people who were, like, you know, white-hot Oakland A's players who get sent down to, who got sent down to, you know, double A, triple A, single A, and then back up again. And you'd watch them go up and down. And at the beginning of their career, they play with a grudge because, you know, they're clawing their way back up to where they think they should be. But like, by the end of it, when we saw like a Giambi or a Zito playing minor league and then coming back up again, you could tell they're like, I just want another chance to claw my way back up and finish it on my terms. Mm-hmm. And I like that this movie did that too, where really Ross is just there because he wants to finish his career on his terms. And, you know, whereas La Flamme is, you can tell for him, he doesn't want to become part of a team because then he has to admit that he was sent down for a reason. And he has to admit that he has to work to claw his way back up again.
Yeah.
And the movie is also about him accepting that. And, you know, it's heavily implied. Like, if you watch how he plays, it's really heavily implied that he doesn't turn around as a player and get the fire in his belly back until he accepts that he needs to put in the work and he needs to get his head in the game in a different way.
And accept the help from a teammate to become part of a team. You know, you just can't be that sort of, when you're not the superstar, what role do you have? And if you're not willing to be part of a team or to rely on somebody else, then you're adrift. You don't have a purpose. And him finding his purpose and getting that back was, it was really delightful to see that little burgeoning friendship between him and Doug. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are players in the AHL who will never make the NHL. I mean, they're just, but they're playing hockey. They're being paid to do something that they love. And there's certainly no shame in that at all. But it's, you know, they're kind of grinding away, and they just know that this is, they've hit their peak, and they have such a sense of, if you watch interviews with these guys or you watch with these career AHL players, they're such a grounding presence because they know how lucky they are. They're mm-hmm. comfortable with their, but they don't have that anxiety of, am I going to be called up, or am I going to make that that next level? It's interesting when you get down to these more minor levels, and even at the ECHL level, you know, the attitudes of the people and how they perceive their role in the game, because not everybody is going to be that, you know, a top 10 draft pick. I'm not even say a top 5 draft pick. And you're just never going to be that superstar, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think we mentioned before the podcast started that, or in the, somewhere in there, that it's actually easier for me to get out to see a hockey game in Stockton than it is to go down to San Jose, based mm-hmm. on where I live in the Bay Area. And the Stockton Thunder was an ECHL team, and I did like to go out and see their games for precisely that reason. Because you've had people who were, you know, gutting it out and playing. Look, hockey is hockey, but I think there's a certain honor and a certain delight that comes in watching people do something for the love of what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And that was certainly evident in all the Stockton games I went to. And that was one of the reasons I enjoyed going. Like, now, the Stockton Thunder's been relocated. They got bought by the Calgary Flames. They've been moved up to Glens Falls. And now it's the Stockton Heat, which is a Calgary team. It's a Calgary farm team. But, you know, it's still... It's the same reason I also enjoy watching minor league baseball games, is because sometimes there are people who are never going to get any better than they are, but they're still playing their hearts out. Mm-hmm. And I find it... tremendously respectful to the fans and the audience when you have people who are excelling, you know, at whatever level they're at. And that was something nice about this movie too, is you show, like, I liked that every coach involved was like, yeah, this is my job. My job is to excel at where I am. You know, you'll notice that none of the coaches you saw had a foot out the door or an eye on an NHL position. They were mm-hmm. just determined to do the best that they could with what they had in the league that they were in.
Right.
You know,
it's interesting because in looking at this movie, it's clearly it is an affiliate sort of situation. But when you're looking at some of the old time hockeys, and Eric, you said this was based on a book by Doug Smith, Doug the Hammer Smith, who actually came to hockey from a fighting career. Like, he learned to skate, like, he started to play until he was 19. And he actually coached, was a hockey fighting coach to teach players how to defend themselves. I think he's now a police officer, but mm-hmm. he wrote a book about his biography, and which is this movie is based upon. But before the NHL was trying to affiliate everything, or every team had an affiliation where they really didn't have a farm system per se, and these were independent teams in their own little leagues, I wonder if this kind of behavior was maybe a little bit more prevalent, because the NHL is trying to stamp that out all the way down the line, because now we have a direct pipeline from ECHL to AHL to the NHL. But when you didn't have that structure in place, I wonder if it was as wild as all of these slapshot in this movie sort of made those games appear to be. I don't know. It's not something I know, because I'm not that mm-hmm. steeped in that kind of hockey knowledge, but... be interesting if any of the listeners know that.
Yeah.
You have to check with your husband. I'm sure he knows.
I'm sure he does.
Yeah.
He knows it all.
The hockey savant. So what was, if you look back, if you were going to recommend this movie to a new hockey fan, and I was thinking about this because to say that this is hockey is sort of like saying, watch Animal House and you'll understand how college works. Because
it's... well put.
Doesn't really correlate, but I think there's inherent things in here that I would recommend to a new hockey team. The sense of team, the sense that you will do what it takes to protect your team. It's this idea that these tight masculine bonding groups that you see on sports, you see in military, you know, you really do form this family. So there's some inherently good things in here, even though it's wildly blown out of proportion. So if you were going to recommend this to a new hockey fan, what would your pitch be?
Hmm. I honestly don't know that I would recommend it to a new hockey fan. I have to say.
Really?
I mean, it's not as I would just recommend this to somebody who wants to watch a sports movie. Like, you know, if you are the kind of person who enjoys the warm fuzzies that you get at the end of a good sports movie, then and you don't mind very lowbrow humor and lots of swearing and lots of blood, some of it, you know, some of it CGI, some of it practical, you know, then yes, watch this movie. If you are, I feel like it wasn't as littered with hockey tropes as something like Slapshot was. And I found that the hockey scenes themselves had way too much editing. You really couldn't see what was actually happening, and I think, you know, maybe that was on purpose because these weren't really people playing hockey necessarily. I don't actually know too much about the filming and who they had as the team members, but I feel like it was very focused on one man's journey as opposed to something like Slapshot, which was focused on a team's journey. This really didn't have all that much to do with the team. They were very much sort of cardboard background characters. Fun characters. It was nice to watch, but this was about Doug.
All right. So you don't have a pitch is what you're saying.
I really don't. I don't. My pitch is the warm fuzzy sports pitch, but that goes to anybody who likes sports films, not just hockey fans.
All right. Lisa, how about you?
Right before filming this podcast, it's like I'm in a studio behind a desk. Right before recording this podcast, I was actually talking to two Canadian friends of mine who are, you know, basically hockey fans by virtue of nationality. Mm-hmm. I mean, they get much more excited about curling, but they're hockey literate. And they had not seen Goon. And the way I pitched it to them was, it's a great movie that shows how men battle the tropes of toxic masculinity without embracing them. And I would actually stand by that, because if you look at all of the different types of manhood that are on display, from, you know, from the older dudes at the coach level to Doug's dad, who is actually a pretty perfect example of like white collar toxic masculinity, to Doug, to his teammates, to the Jay Baruchel character, whose name I can't remember,
Pat,
that's right, Patty, who is accurately described as, it's like he has Tourette's, he can't help it. to everybody else, it's you see all of these people struggling with the idea of what it means to be a man, and all of them coming up with different answers, and you actually see how those answers play out for them. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, and I really feel like the way that they write Doug, who again is somebody where you could, oh, he's so alpha because he fights. No, he's somebody who, you know, has basically been spending his life looking for a way to connect with people and to do something that adds value to the world. And he finds it. That's what the whole movie's about. And so, you know, I pitched it that way, where it was basically like, no, it's in no way a sports movie. It's basically a movie about dudes trying to figure out who they're going to be and trying to process through all the messages they get about how to be a man and how to be an adult in the world and how those work out for them. You know, I think it's really telling, for example, that Patty's form of masculinity comes off with his incredibly profuse profanity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like that's his masculine posturing, because he weighs like a 110 soaking wet and has a haircut like Woody Woodpecker, but he manages to challenge, like he has this hyper aggressive verbal style that is obviously his performative masculinity. And mm-hmm. It's really clear that's exactly what it is.
Right. And he's such a supportive friend.
Exactly. Like, he's really, like, he's the first one that says, I really love you. I want this to work for you. And he is not afraid or ashamed to say that. Like, he's 100% in touch with his emotions. And that's what I found really interesting about that character, is he's so emotive and he's not scared of having emotions. He just, like, cloaks them in this thick, woolly blanket of F-bombs. And it's sort of his way of watch the hand. And right. I was fascinated by, you know, again, this movie feels it presents as very bro-y, and then you pay attention to the way the characters talk to each other. Like, you've got that one dude on the hockey team who's basically like a hype man, and that's right, go out there, we're all a team on the ice, and he literally is just there. He's like the Gale King to everyone else's Oprah. And, you know, these guys accept each other's quirks. And, you know, even the Russian smack talking, who are actually one of my favorite parts of the film, how these two Russians just like come in and are repeatedly saying horrible things about everybody constantly. And everyone is like, yeah, we don't listen to you. We just... we keep you around because you play.
All right. Do you think that maybe they were a slight poke at the Sadian twins?
Yeah.
The Sadian brothers.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I that was like my, like, okay, because everybody thinks they're kind of, you know what I mean? There's this sort of underlying, these guys are a little off because they're so close. And
yeah.
So I was like, oh,
it's not gay if you're brothers.
And that's right. Just,
no, it's actually weirder.
It's something else. And it's just as weird. I love that approach to it, because as you pay attention, once you get past, like you said, all the language, all the blood, like, it's really interesting how they portray the relationships in this and how progressive they are, which is something that caught me by surprise. I just didn't expect to have those kind of feelings about a movie that every other word was F this and F that. And teeth were falling on the ice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that I appreciated about this is, you know, we talk about the fight culture and how it is going away and how it is problematic. But this idea of being the protector, and I mentioned this when we talked to Erica about why I don't mind an aggressive game sometimes, because when you have, you know, a rookie coming in, particularly a star rookie, and I'm thinking, you know, Connor McDavid on the Edmonton Oilers, and even, you know, the rookies on a lot of the rookies this season, they get banged up a little bit. You know, you guys, you know, trying to put them in their place and other team members trying to shut them down. So the idea of there being somebody on the ice who's part of their job is to take the heat for that and just sort of protect, be a protector figure, is sort of very romantic in a very sort of old school chivalrous way that I think if you apply those tropes to this hyper masculine sport, I find a little appealing. And I don't know whether that's, I don't know whether I should feel bad about that or not. I struggle with it. I got to be honest. Yeah. I struggle with it. But it all, I also find it appealing in some way that you have a person who is taking that role on and saying, I am going to be here for you and I'm going to stand between you and that. So this movie definitely has that. I mean, Doug, he says, if my team needs me to bleed, I will bleed for my team. This is my role, is to be the protector. And that can be comforting. And I think sometimes it's nice to know that there's people out there like that.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder if this is actually a gendered thing. And the reason I say that is my own personal baggage with the protector role is you see how quickly it slides into paternalism. Yes. And curtailing your rights.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of language that goes around, we should protect and save women and they need protection. And what that usually means is we will curtail your freedoms in the name of protecting you. But if it's between people of the same gender, I don't think the power dynamics are there, or the mm-hmm. uncomfortable history of oppressing one person in the name of protection. So maybe that makes it a little bit more palatable when you think, okay, this is a relationship between two equals and one offers protection because the other one needs it. And there's no expectation of reciprocity, or there's no expectation of dominance.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's exactly right. And I think you touched exactly on why I feel uncomfortable finding that appealing sometimes, because it does so often move into a thing where I'm taking something away from you. Mm-hmm. Where I think in this kind of relationship, you have something that's very valuable to me and I want to protect it to make sure that happens. Your scoring ability, your speed, whatever it is that you're bringing to the team is a benefit to me, and it behooves me to make sure that you can perform that way. And often the protector role, that is not how that works at all. Yeah. So to see that play out in a way where the dynamics are much more equal is appealing.
I think that's why in our podcast episode, I sort of bristled a little bit at your use of the word chivalry, because I think chivalry is such a loaded term. It comes with the idea of protection and sort of subjugation, whereas, you know, I don't know that we necessarily have a word that fits really well what we're talking about here in a sporting context, because
defense is probably the closest.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. It's defense. Yeah.
Because I played intramural water polo in college, and I'm a terrible scorer. Like, I was playing blind anyway, I didn't have my glasses on, but I'm a great defender. And I never felt bad about the fact that I never scored because I used to keep other people from scoring, and I used to clear the path for you know the attackers on my team, and I used to help the goalie. And in the context of how we played as a team, that was my goal. My goal was to be a human wall. And I think with something like hockey, it is you know the defender attacker, and you know the attackers know that they can't do a darn thing if they don't have somebody who's clearing, who's making it possible for them. Mm. And that's a much different relationship than something like chivalry, where it's like, I'm going to decide, this is your honor, this is how I'm going to protect it, this is how I'm going to define it and defend it. You don't get much of a say in the matter.
This is true.
You know?
I also think
complementary equals, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we also may have inadvertently explained the appeal of slash fiction.
It's always right there under the surface.
It's always right there. Yeah.
Well, it all comes back to slash fiction, no matter what podcast you're on.
Yep. Doesn't even matter, does it?
Mm-mm. Nope. No.
It's the podcast world. Well, guys, this has been so much fun. Lisa, I am so glad that you came on to discuss Goon and hockey and all sorts of other toxic masculinity issues. This was such a great movie to sort of delve into this idea of sports films in the world of hockey and how they relate to today in the game. So
I had such a great time being on this podcast. Thank you. Yeah. And it's fun. It's fun to talk hockey. It reminded me how much I love it.
Oh, so now we got to go like watch some, I think.
I think so. Well, it's so much fun to watch it in a group. Like you were talking about earlier, you watch it with a spouse and it's one thing, but I always love it when we kind of get absorbed into like a larger group. Like the last time, my husband's a big Red Wings fan. I root for the Capitals. He roots for the Red Wings. We actually began dating when they played each other in the Stanley Cup.
Oh dear.
Oh, it was so. Well, you know, we are. Well, we both won in the end. I guess we're married. But but yeah, it was a rough series for me. And but we went to see a Red Wings Sharks game a couple of years ago, and he wore his Red Wings jersey, and we got adopted by this group of Russian Red Wings fans, and it was so much fun because it was us and like 10. Really, like 10 guys who look like they could have comfortably survived a prison sentence on the step, and they were all chanting "Red Wings, Red Wings," and it was just so great to be part of that crowd and you know your camaraderie for that moment there. And that's what I love about hockey, is it's such a great game to watch with a crowd.
It could definitely get passionate, and it could definitely get loud, and I can't imagine a better way to spend an evening with friends. So,
right. Yeah.
Well, guys, thanks again. This has been a ton of fun, and thanks for listening, audience. You have been listening to a special edition of Beginner's Puck.
Yeah, and thank you all for supporting the Incomparable Podcast Network. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, members.
Yes, and remember, hockey is for everyone.
Beginner's Puck is a Castria production for the Incomparable Network. Our catchy theme tune is Ephemeral by Sunspot. Have a hockey question you'd like us to discuss on an upcoming episode? Reach out to us on Twitter @BeginnersPuck, email us at beginnerspuck@gmail.com, or leave a comment at theincomparable.com/puck.